This is The Book and the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
Tel Shiloh, an important biblical site 25 miles north of Jerusalem, was the center of Israelite worship for 300 years before Jerusalem became the capital. Excavations continue at the site each summer, directed by Scott Stripling of Associates for Biblical Research. He's also the provost of the Bible Seminary in Katy, Texas, and president of the Near East Archaeological Society. In the first part of this interview, we talked about the gate area and a monumental building that may have served as a tabernacle, and the Favisa, Area D, where a huge amount of the bones of sacrificial animals were kept. But when they got to the bottom of the Favisa, they kept on digging.
Underneath the Favisa, we wanted to see where bedrock was. It's a good thing I'm not a betting man, because I thought it would be about a half meter down, and we went 2.5 meters further down. About a meter and a half down, we began to encounter the storage jars. So we were careful not to damage them. They were broken, but they were intact. Now, the funny thing from the story is at the beginning of the day, I said to Jordan, "Don't even bother coming back for lunch today if you don't bring me burned olive pits," because I wanted them for radiocarbon dating. What does he do at the end of the day? He brings me about 500 burned olive pits. Two of the jars, it turns out, because we have an archaeobotanist on site. So we used to wait a year for these types of results. I know immediately two jars are full of olives. One is full of lentils. These jars date from the Middle Bronze Age, the Canaanite period. Above that was the Favisa. So now we can see the entire cross-section profile of what was going on in Area D.
What does that indicate about the Canaanite residents of Shiloh before the Israelites arrived?
Well, I'll tell you, we have to do more. I mean, we're going to have to expand the area. We thought we were almost done in Area D, but we're going to have to expand it more to explore this. But one thing in particular, I have said that Shiloh was clearly occupied at the time of the conquest. So when Joshua and the Israelites arrive, there are people living there, but there's no battle that takes place, which of course immediately reminds us of Shechem, where the Shechemites join in with the Israelites in this covenant renewal ceremony. My hypothesis has been that Shiloh was part of the Shechem city-state. What the storage jars give us is confirmation of that fact, that indeed it was occupied immediately before the conquest. So it wasn't a vacant site, and those people didn't fight the Israelites. They confederated with them, which is, by the way, exactly what we read in the Amarna letter. So we have the people of Silu who have confederated with these invaders, these Habiru who have come into the land.
You've been working on a paper with Dr. Billington about this Amarna connection.
It's done. It will be published by T.N.T. Clark, the whole Festschrift, in honor of, I'm doing this because it's a big book. We've edited the whole thing, Mark Hassler, Clyde Billington, and I. We are just finishing the indexes right now, and it'll be out probably early in 2027. Folks will be able to get access to not only that article of ours, but lots of other great articles that will honor the life's work of Edwin Yamauchi on his 90th birthday.
Yeah, he was a stellar figure, and he's still receiving Artifacts Magazine, our biblical archaeology news magazine. I hear from him occasionally. He's been a great scholar for many years. What kind of reaction are you getting to this assertion of the connection to the Amarna letters?
Well, very good as far as the Shiloh connection. Now, whether the Habiru are the Hebrews, you're going to get a very mixed reaction from scholars on that. Many are going to embrace that emphatically, and others are going to reject it, like Rainey did emphatically. But Shiloh, as being Silu of EA 288, has been an across-the-board open acceptance of that. Like, wow, that makes more sense than some fort down in Egypt, which is what has been thought up to this point.
Well, you've been talking about some of the experts that you have on site, an archaeobotanist, and then your zoo archaeologist, Haskell Greenfield. Tell us a little bit more about how that works and how they do what they do.
It's really cool because you see your ceramic typologists are doing their things. In my case, that's Anna de Vincent and Leora Freud. And then you go over to the next table and you've got the archaeobotanist, because we're doing all this high-tech flotation to get heavy fraction of seeds. And incidentally, in Judea and Samaria, I just attended a conference, and our archaeobotanist, Andrea Orendi, from along with Linda Whitaker, but Andrea is from Tübingen, she said there are no sites excavated in Judea, Samaria that we have this archaeobotanical profile of the seeds. And so Shiloh will set the baseline now for future excavations that they'll be able to compare against that. So picture this archaeobotanical analysis going on over here, where they're picking through, you know, getting the little rocks out and separating what are the seeds, so that then we can look at them under microscopes and determine the phylum, genus, and species and all of this. And then if it's something we need to know right away, like the contents of a storage jar, then of course we prioritize that and move it to the front of the list. On the next table, you have the zoo archaeologist, Haskell, along with a student of his and then other students. If anyone's kind of lame that day, you know, sprained an ankle or whatever, we'll move them over to help some of this lighter work with the analysis. Here we're doing bone analysis, seed analysis, ceramic analysis, all right there on site. It's a fantastic operation.
One of the things I remember from our excavations at Tel Afek was putting a pottery back together, like these giant puzzles. Are you doing that?
We do sometimes, but we have such a good system at Tel Aviv University. We partner with the different Israeli universities for different things, but the lab at Tel Aviv the last few years has just been fantastic. And since Leora, who's a professor at Tel Aviv University, is my ceramic typologist, it's really easy to send it to their labs because Leora is right there to supervise. Some of the stuff's going to end up in museums, and we want to make sure that it's just done excellently.
Yeah. Well, we were a Tel Aviv University excavation at Tel Afek. I actually got a chance to visit. They had a lot of ceramics there. The head of the excavation was Moshe Kohavi.
Okay.
That was a fun field trip when we got to see what was going on back in the lab. You just joined us. We're talking with Scott Stripling about the 2026 excavations at Shiloh in Israel. What else is going on in archaeology that you're interested in or connected with that you'd like to share with people?
One thing, Gordon, is that Highway 60, the road that sort of parallels the Patriarch's Highway and runs through the so-called West Bank or Judea Samaria, is being widened. It has been under construction for a year. By next summer, I'm quite sure it will be done because they have made tremendous progress. I've said, you know, if you want to lower tensions between Arabs and Jews, widen Highway 60, you know, because just that traffic is terrible. In the process of widening Highway 60, however, hundreds of archaeological projects had to be done. The big lime kiln at Kerbet El Makadr that we excavated is no longer there because Highway 60 had to be widened. Hundreds of new projects this last summer have come to light because of the widening of Highway 60. In addition to some of the other salvage projects, I was asked to supervise a second archaeological project while I was there this summer, Mount Bezek. Mount Bezek is where Saul in 1 Samuel 11 musters the Israelite troops before they go to battle with the Ammonites. And it's a commanding view of the northern part of Israel. I was happy to do it because I thought my students and the other students working with us would just be a great opportunity for them to have another experience at another archaeological site. Turns out it's more primitive than Kerbet Kayafa, but dating to that same horizon, sort of the time of Saul and David, which is, you know, one of the issues in archaeology these days is what was the extent of the Iron Age 2A kingdom. Have my eyes on El Arraj, which I think is probably going to turn out to be a biblical Bethsaida. Hatzor is in the field in a very small way this summer. They didn't have any foreigners because of the war situation, but they have a small team digging at Hatzor.
It was good to see this summer more archaeology going on than last summer. It was really disrupted by the politics and the wars and everything else, which haven't been resolved yet.
We were able to have a great dig season, and we were never in danger. We had one day where there was some bombing that took place. I should also mention that Ashdod, they're in the field. They've clarified the old Iron Age gate complex that Moshe Dothan had uncovered, and now I think they're getting into clean, new contacts. That's where the Ark of the Covenant, the famous Dagon's Temple incident happened at Ashdod. So it'll be very interesting to see over the next few years. Yitzhak Shai is directing that. And I think Lanier School of Archaeology from Lipscomb is partnering with them. Colorado Christian is part of that consortium too. So really looking forward to seeing what they find at Ashdod in the coming years. We had three folks from my team, as a matter of fact, when our dig ended, they moved over to work with them.
It's kind of fun. Now, watching archaeology on social media, you guys post to media and some of these other digs that you've just mentioned. I've been looking at their photos and their posts, and you could get a good sense. It seems like there's a lot more archaeology just from the social media that's available. Back here in the US, we can keep our thumb on
Yeah.
it a little more closely.
There are about 100 excavations going on in a typical summer in Israel, some large, some small, and so forth. About 30,000 archaeological sites in the country, in just in Israel. And so you could just imagine when you say that there's more than there was. Yeah, but we're still just barely scratching the surface. Pardon the pun.
We first started talking about 17 years ago, I think. Maybe you were at Kirbet El Makadr, and you just mentioned that site. What's happened with Kirbet El Makadr?
Well, Kirbet El Makadr, of course, I published volume two back in 2023. Volume one should be out in early 2027. I know we've got it backwards, but that's just the way it turned out. Bryant Wood and Boyd Sievers, Bryant doing the Bronze Age, Boyd doing the Iron Age one village that we had there. It is now done essentially and should be published by Archaeo Press. I think scholars will be eager to sink their teeth into that and analyze the pottery and see if it matches what they would expect it to be if it was indeed biblical eye. The site is finished. Unfortunately, it's been vandalized, badly since we finished, and the widening of the highway. That's why these excavations really matter, Gordon, is because if we hadn't done what we did, we would never have that data. Okay, so the highway's widened, and then you've got the vandalism and urban sprawl and all these other things. We're sort of in a race against time.
With Kirbet El Makadr being published and all of your scientific work out there for other archaeologists to look at and study, if they decide that this site really was the biblical site of Ai, that would be a major change.
Yeah, it would. In addition to that, in the Second Temple period, we have an important village there that I identified as possibly Ephraim of John 11:54. I think that's gotten some traction already. But the opportunity for people to study archaeology in the classroom and then in the summer to go into the field, it was like our own lab there because nothing had been built on top of it. And here was this beautiful Second Temple period village that came to light with the mikvot and the olive presses and the wine presses and the first century houses and all of these things. Underneath that is where we had the better preserved Bronze Age ruins that I think will be very interesting to analyze those remains. They're free downloads, incidentally, at Archaeo Press. You can get volume two free download right now. Once volume one comes out, you'll also be able to get a free download there. We paid extra so that everybody would have access to it.
Well, there's always something going on in biblical archaeology, and that's why we can do a radio program every week to talk about it. My thanks to Scott Stripling for joining us on the program today, the Provost of the Bible Seminary in Katy, Texas, President of the Near East Archaeological Society, and Director of Excavations for Associates for Biblical Research at Tel Shiloh. We have a website with resources at radioscribe.com that includes breaking news videos from the Israel Antiquities Authority, also information about Artifacts, our biblical archaeology news magazine. That's at radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Thanks for joining us. We invite you to join us again next time for more backgrounders on the Bible through biblical archaeology on The Book and the Spade.
The Book and the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.